Combat skills. Dodge level 1, progress 0%. Small blades level 2, progress 0%. Backstab level 1, progress 0%. Archery level 3, progress 0%. Magic skills. Fire magic level 2, progress 0%.
Level 2, I can only cast fire blast and fire arrow so far.
She said. I don't know much about fire magic myself, but perhaps I can find something for you in the library. We'll need all the help we can get if we're to infiltrate the Scourge camps.
When will we go? I asked as we made it to the ground level and followed Adili around a stony path.
Let's plan to push out tomorrow, but you should try to gain some experience before we go. You can hone your skills in the surrounding forest.
We reached a small square home the size of a walk-in closet, just large enough for a bed and a small chest.
You can sleep here, and use it for storage of items while you're in the Vale.
Toilet? I asked.
Toilet?
Adili looked at me curiously. My eyes scanned up and down Adili's healthy bosom and fit frame. I shook my head. Never mind. I wasn't prepared to push that question any further on an elven princess. Leaves it is. Chapter 14. Day 4. Earth. An old gray-haired man in a fine business suit leaned over and spoke into his mic.
Mr. Sizemore, can you please tell us your involvement with the creation of Eden's Gate and the Nexicon VR system?
Aaron looked over to Kendra, who was sitting beside him, and then back out to the hundreds of Congress members who were sitting in stands at the congressional hearing.
As assistant VP at Nexicon, I was closest to Dr. Winston in the creation of the product development.
By assistant VP, you mean that you are the assistant of the vice president, correct?
No, that's incorrect. Technically, there was no vice president of the company. While I was second in command to Dr. Winston, he maintained such strict control over the product that I was never given a title greater than assistant. VP just sounded cool, really.
The old man raised his eyebrows in surprise.
So, on the day in which you launched the code in order to send Eden's Gate into demo mode, you had no idea the consequences of your actions. Is that correct, Mr. Sizemore?
Aaron gulped and leaned forward into his mic.
That's correct.
The old man turned and looked to the audience of other Congress members and tilted his eyes to the side, before turning his back towards the stage in which the two Nexicon employees were sitting.
So, you're telling me that as second in command and as one of the lead programmers of Eden's Gate, you had no idea that the demo mode launch had been tampered with, that the source code had been encoded, and that the administration process had been password protected?
That is correct.
With all due respect, Mr. Sizemore, how is that possible?
Aaron cleared his throat.
I helped code a small portion of the world and the base for the artificial intelligence, but Rupert, Dr. Winston, was responsible for nearly everything. He was a genius, to say the least, and he wanted full control of pretty much everything.
The old man sighed.
Do you concur with Mr. Sizemore's statements, Mrs. Ramos?
Kendra leaned forward into the mic and swallowed before speaking. Her brow was already building a visible layer of sweat.
I do.
The old man tapped his fingers on the thick oak wood counter in front of him, and silence hung in the air for several seconds.
Let's get real for a moment, Mr. Sizemore,
the old man spat.
5 million people.
The old man allowed his words to resonate before he began.
More than 5 million people have lost their lives, including my niece. And every day, more people are killing themselves for the opportunity to be immortalized in this fictional world that you helped create.
The man sucked on his lips and looked hard at Aaron.
I want to know why you can't put a stop to this.
Aaron grabbed his mic with his hand, causing reverberations to echo through the chamber.
Even if I wanted to stop it, Eden's Gate uses 16,386-bit encryption, which would never be cracked in our lifetime. Further, the system is running on a CPU blockchain. There is no power-down button.
CPU blockchain?
The old man asked.
Explain that for the rest of us who are less technically inclined.
Basically, anyone who has ever installed Nexicon software, over 3 billion people, also installed our patented CPU blockchain. That means that more than 3 billion devices around the world are powering both Eden's Gate processing and CPU. Even if you shut down one device, the other devices will pick up the slack and validate the data, so it can't be tampered with.
And how do these devices communicate? We could simply turn off the internet to cause your blockchain to fail.
This isn't 2017 anymore, Senator Gates. Our blockchain was developed to use the internet, intranet, direct Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, satellite, and Nexicon's Alt-Fi technology. Basically, it will fail-safe to any communication method. Every personal computer, cell phone, and gaming system in the world with Nexicon software is powering Eden's Gate.
Senator Gates sat down in his chair and leaned his body on a loose elbow.
So, let's just say there was a global shutdown, a complete blackout. For a day, we shut down all processing devices, all data connections around the world. Would that be enough to put an end to this?
That's impossible, Kendra suddenly said into the mic.
We're talking about lives here, Mrs. Ramos,
Senator Gates said firmly.
If that kind of action is what it takes, we will make it happen.
His eyes moved back over to Aaron.
Would that be enough to shut this thing down?
Aaron sucked in a deep breath of air and thought for a moment.
If you could shut down enough equipment that there was not enough power for the CPU blockchain to run, then yeah, I guess it's theoretically possible. But even if there's an island in the South Pacific with 100 PCs that have the blockchain running, that would be enough to power Eden's Gate. And even if you could...
Aaron's eyes darted from left to right.
You wouldn't want to do that. There's millions of people conscious in there right now.
A low rumble of chuckles bounced off the chamber walls.
We're talking about a video game, right?
Senator Gates asked.
Yes, it's a video game, but...
Then it's not real,
the senator blurted.
Do you agree that this game is merely a sequence of ones and zeros running on a computer platform?
Aaron sighed.
Of course, but if you break down human consciousness to the most basic level, we're just a sequence of complicated ones and zeros as well. People are really living inside of the game.
Another rumble of laughter rang out.
There's no evidence that people are alive in the game, right?
The senator asked.
You can't see what they're doing. We can't communicate with them. As far as we know, the number of people your system shows as logged in is just a number. It could mean anything.
Aaron held up his palm.
I understand the way you feel, but if you haven't been inside of Eden's Gate, then I don't think you'd understand. Eden's Gate is the pinnacle of virtual technology. It is basically another world like we have here on Earth. When you're inside, you experience everything like you would in the real...
Real world?
Senator Gates interrupted.
This,
he pointed his finger to the ground,
is the real world. What you're talking about is a game. I think we all understand the difference between a real world, created by God, and a game created by a psychopathic programmer.
You can simply recall the existing Nexicon VR units and let the system run,
Aaron said dismissively.
It won't hurt anything to keep it running.
You shipped 8 million units. There's no guarantee we'd get them all or that someone wouldn't replicate the technology. It must be a full-scale shutdown.
I don't know how else to explain it to you, but the people who transferred their consciousness to the game are alive, even if their bodies are dead.
There was a moan from the onlookers, and Senator Gates rolled his eyes as he turned around to face the committee.
We've lost millions already, and every day people around the world are dying due to this ridiculous promise of living out the rest of their lives in Eden's Gate. What I'm proposing is a worldwide shutdown, a recall of all Nexicon VR units, a shutdown of the internet, power, and a clean sweep of all devices that have or may have Nexicon software installed. This is a huge undertaking, but we must protect the lives of this and future generations.
Senator Gates paused and panned his hand all around the room.
All in favor, say aye.
A near unanimous aye roared through the room. Aaron swallowed hard and looked over to Kendra. He knew that nothing he could say could change the congressmen's minds. They weren't gamers and would never understand gamers or virtual technology. Only someone who had experienced Eden's Gate would understand that the world was as real, on a perception level, as the world he was sitting in now, and that people's consciousnesses were really living inside of that world.
Very well, Senator Gates said. We'll contact the president and start the recalls of the Nexicon VR as soon as possible. We'll connect with every government around the world to arrange for a global shutdown of the grid. Whether data networks or power, we will get this shut down.
Aaron turned to Kendra, a worried look on his face. Only they and some gamers around the world would ever understand just how real Eden's Gate was. Only they would understand that by shutting down the system, they'd essentially be taking the lives of 5 million people, and counting.
Chapter 15. Month 1, Day 4, Year 1.
There's a few vendors on the ground level of the Vale if you wish to buy or sell anything, Adili said. There's also a tall runestone on the hill just above the palace. If you wish to pray to any god, you may do so there.
They had praying in this world as well? I couldn't imagine how that tied into the game, but surely it meant something. I recalled getting special powers and bonuses through use of faith in other games. I'd need to check that out.
Thanks. I'll be seeing you, Adili said and walked away. I closed the door to my room and started moving things over to my new bag. Since I now had the Elven Touch trait, I was also anxious to see what kind of magic items I had looted in Nambunga's cave.
You've received Warlock's Robe of Apathy, plus 3 armor, requires 28 intelligence. Durability, 9 out of 10. Quality, exceptional. Rarity, epic. Weight, 1 kilogram. Plus 20% magic resistance. Plus 20% magic damage. Minus 25% health. You've received Staff of Depravity. 10 to 20 attack damage. Requires 30 intelligence. Durability, 9 out of 10. Quality, exceptional. Rarity, epic. Weight, 1.1 kilograms. Plus 20% magic damage. Minus 10 health. On cast, Blight. 17 charges left. You've received Band of Divine Concentration. Requires 15 intelligence. Durability, 9 out of 10. Quality, exceptional. Rarity, epic. Weight, 0.1 kilogram. Mana regens 20% faster. Spells that require channeling cast 25% faster.
The massive boost of magic damage that the staff and robe gave were interesting, but they wouldn't do me any good for a long time coming. It seemed like a good idea just to sell them. The ring's 20% mana regen would be helpful, however, and I had completely forgotten that I had reached 15 intelligence right after getting out of the cave. I slid the ring over my finger, and there was no more trembling. In fact, I could feel a soothing energy flowing out of it, and all through my body. The ring also had a channeling reduction, but since I had no channeling spells or even knew what those were, it gave me no benefit. A nice find, in any event. I decided to go for a walk around the elven village, and the moment I stepped outside my new room, I already felt a little weird. I was literally the only human anywhere to be seen, and you would think that some of the elves had never seen a human, the way they looked at me. They were friendly, though, and although they all stared a little too long, most of them made an effort to smile and talk.
"Welcome to the Vale,"
a young elven girl said as I passed by her on my way to who knows where. "Thank you," I replied.
"Welcome to the Vale," an elven man said 5 seconds later.
Figuring things out in Mistvale was quite a bit more difficult than they were in Linden. None of the buildings had signs, so the only way to find specific places was to walk around until you stumbled across the right spot, or ask around. "Somewhere to sell weapons or armor?" I asked a passing elf.
The elf pointed to a circular home that looked just like any other. Rise lives in that building there. He usually buys arms at a fair price.
I immediately went into the shop to sell my spoils to Rise, a tall, young elf, and while he was alarmed when he first saw a human walk through the door, once he realized I was there to do business, he quickly calmed. By the time I left his shop, I had sold the robe, the staff, and the ringmail gauntlets for a total of 494 gold. Not bad, I thought. I left Rise's shop and continued my walk around until I noticed a wooden stall that was selling food and water. Thankfully, the game didn't seem programmed to cause too much harm if you went a day without food. But after a good 12 hours or so without eating or drinking, a severe thirst and hunger started to kick in. I bought a flask of water, a loaf of bread, and an elven pie for the bargain price of 5 gold. I have no idea what was in the elven pie, but it was perhaps the most delicious thing I'd ever eaten in my life.
You are well fed. Stamina and vitality increased by 15% while this effect is active.
With a tummy full of food, I started up the hill above the palace, hoping to find the runestone that Adili told me about. It only took me about 10 minutes or so to get there, but once I was on top of the hill, I saw a large rectangular stone jutting out of the ground, and several symbols etched on its front, a soft white glow, almost invisible, throbbing around its entirety. On the ground near the stone were 2 elves, a male and a female, kneeling down in prayer position, their eyes closed and their palms pressed together. They spoke quietly to themselves in such whispers that I couldn't understand what they were saying. As I walked closer to the runestone, I felt an energy drawing me towards it, and when I was only a meter or so from the stone, I almost felt like a physical hook was pulling me in. Something compelled me. I couldn't explain what, but it was like I was being told to either kneel down and pray or touch the runestone. I chose to do both and leaned down directly in front of the runestone and placed my hand on the side.
Do you wish to bind yourself to this location?
Aha! So that's what the purpose of the runestone was. I concentrated on binding myself to the stone and tiny sparkles of nothingness began shimmering on my skin and rising into the sky, vanishing when they were a few inches into the air.
You have bound to this location. Using a recall home spell or death will return you to this position.
There was a recall spell in this game too? Add that to the list of things I wanted to get my hands on. As I walked away from the runestone, the 2 elves were still praying, seeming to not have even noticed me or me binding to the stone. I started for the jungle surrounding the Mist Vale as I needed to try to level up my skills in preparation for the attack on the Scourge camps. I started north and walked for several minutes before I encountered anything other than tiny insects and a few creatures who I knew were hanging out in the foliage above me, but moved too fast for me to see what they were. I eventually came across a small pool of muddy water, and surrounding it was a large group of frisbee-sized mosquitoes.
Name, jungle mosquito. Race, insect. Level, 4. Health, 20. Mana, 0. Stamina, 30. Status, aggressive.
They filled the air with an annoying buzzing sound, but they were flying fairly slow and spaced in a way that they seemed like they would be easy to pick off. I shot the closest one with a fire blast, which knocked it to the ground. It buzzed around as its wings burned to a crisp and eventually stopped moving.
You have gained 40 XP.
I inspected the fallen mosquito and didn't find anything of use in its charred remains, but 40 XP seemed like a decent pull on such an easy kill. I fireblasted a few more mosquitoes and they all went down just like the first, netting me 40 XP each in the process. And I took note that my mana was recharging notably faster since I got my new Band of Divine Concentration. While I waited for my mana to recharge, I used arrows to shoot the mosquitoes, but shooting the flying mosquitoes was difficult, and generally took at least 2 shots to take one down. There must have been 15 or so mosquitoes I found around the stagnant water, and I fireblasted or shot them all, netting me significant XP. When the last one was down, I was already 60% towards my next level. That's what you call power leveling. There was a small chest sticking out of the stagnant water, but it was locked, and a fire blast, a fire arrow, and a good old-fashioned kick wouldn't open it up.
I made a mental note to check back if I ever found a key or figured out a way to open locks and moved on. I continued further north until I heard the buzzy sound of mumbling or talking. I wasn't sure what it was that I was hearing, but it definitely didn't sound like an animal. As I grew closer, it was clear that it was a voice that I was hearing, so I sank into sneak mode and approached cautiously. A small pink creature, no more the size of a house cat with no clothes and just a puff of white hair growing out of the top of its head, sat on a log, waving its hand around and talking to itself. It had beady eyes and two small gray horns were growing out of its hair. It smiled as it spoke and looked friendly enough.
Name, Forest Imp. Race, Demon. Level, 11. Health, 150. Mana, 150. Stamina, 50. Status, unknown.
At level 11, I knew there was little chance that I could kill the thing, but even if it had been a few levels lower, I'm not sure if I would have attacked. It was too damn cute, and maybe it could speak something other than that scrambled gibberish that it was saying to itself. But given its status, I wasn't about to find out. The creature laughed as if it had just told itself a funny joke, and then started slapping its hand against the log. What the fuck? I thought. Apparently the imp was insane. I turned and sneaked away, leaving the crazy imp to banter alone. I turned back the way I came, careful not to venture too far from the Mistvale village, and when I was almost at the area where I killed the mosquitoes, I started east to look for more things to kill. I walked for roughly 15 minutes, in which all I managed to kill were a couple of level 1 frogs, granting me the smallest amount of XP, until I stumbled across a dilapidated house in a small clearing. The 2-story wooden house was overgrown with weeds and plants, the windows were busted out, and there was a massive hole in its slanted roof. The chances that someone was still living in a place like this was unlikely, but I hunkered down into sneak mode, readied my bow, and approached with caution anyway. I did a quick check in the small garden nearby the home and found nothing. I looked behind the house where there were 2 large barrels, and when I checked inside, I found that one of them contained a small vial with a sparkling red powder inside.
You've received red inscription powder. Durability, 5 out of 5. Quality, average. Rarity, uncommon. Weight, 0.1 kilogram. Used for inscription.
Used for inscription? That wasn't helpful at all. I tried to focus more on the powder and then on the word inscription, but no additional information was provided. I just bagged the item and moved on. I knocked an arrow and took a deep breath before I kicked open the door to the house and stepped inside, like I was some sort of bow-wielding police officer, looking for the dealer who was selling drug-infused food rations to children. As I scanned the room, I lowered my bow, as everything looked okay. There was a skeleton inside that was impaled in the center of its chest by a beautifully crafted sword. He still had on his clothes, a pair of nice slacks and white frilly dress shirt, and a tricorn with gold etching on his head. It looked like he was going somewhere special, but never made it, obviously. I could almost feel the energy emanating from the sword, and I went to grab it to see what kind of loot I had come across. But right before my hand reached the sword's hilt, the skeleton became animated. I immediately stepped back and was readying my bow as the skeleton stood to its feet, but it was too fast. The skeleton yanked the sword from its chest, narrowly missing my neck, but instead connected with my bow, breaking it in 2 and sending pieces of broken wood and string flying across the room. Fuck! I yelled as I ducked below another fast swipe of its sword.
Help me!
A slow, raspy voice rang out from somewhere. Was it the skeleton talking? I couldn't tell. I rolled to my side, dodging another swing of the skeleton's sword and lashed out, casting fire blast on the skeleton. The impact was strong enough to send the skeleton flying backwards and to the ground, but just as soon as it hit the ground, it started standing up again.
Name, Tormented Lover. Race, Undead. Level, 7. Health, 80. Mana, 0. Stamina, 80. Status, Aggressive.
Tormented Lover? What the fuck? How about Skeletal Warrior, or something a little more accurate? I shot the skeleton with several more fire blasts until my mana ran out, and while I managed to char its bones, it seemed like it was resisting a lot of damage. I reached for my corroded sword, knowing that attacking or blocking it with my training dagger would probably not work out so well, considering the size of his sword and the amount of power he was putting behind each strike. The skeleton swung again, and this time I held up my blade to block his strike. Sparks shot out from our blades colliding, and I could feel the force of the blow reverberate down the hilt and into the bones of my wrists and arms. I managed to block the strike, but even blocking such a hard blow hurt. My health dropped by 2%.
Advancement, you have learned the skill, block. Oops, did I just mitigate all your damage? Block is linked to strength and dexterity. Increase your strength and dexterity to increase your ability to block.
I glanced at the message about block and figured I was still taking minimal damage because my strength was too low. Damn it, why did every stat have to be useful? The skeleton swung again, and I blocked, but this time I lashed back out with a swing of my own, connecting with one of its arms. The frail bone of its arm splintered off, leaving it nothing but a useless bony stump. The skeleton seemed unaffected by this, though, and still stomped forward, swinging its sword with its remaining arm.
Advancement, you have learned the skill, swords. The pen is mightier than the sword, says he who has never wielded a sword. Swords is linked to strength and dexterity. Increase your strength and dexterity to increase your ability with swords.
The skeleton raised its sword high and slammed it down hard at my head. I sidestepped slightly and again blocked the blow, but that block was incredibly painful. Our blades were locked together as the one-armed skeleton leaned in and looked at me with emptied pits for eyes.
Help me,
again the raspy voice said from somewhere. Was it the skeleton's spirit or someone else? Metal screeched against metal as I slid the blade of the corroded sword out from the weight of the skeletons, and I ducked down, swinging my sword at the skeleton's kneecaps, taking both of its legs out at the same time. The skeleton fell, more of its bones shattering as it hit the ground, but it still swung out trying to connect with anything in its immobile state. I parried the skeleton's erratic last-ditch effort to kill me and swung at the skeleton's neck, severing its head from its body and causing it to roll a couple feet on the floor. Finally, the skeleton stopped moving.
You have gained 150 XP.
That should help you, I mocked cockily as I sheathed my sword and caught my breath. I bent down to pick up the nice-looking sword that the skeleton was holding, but as soon as my hand was within a centimeter of touching the hilt, a thick, dark cloud swirled around my arm and froze it from moving any closer. I pulled away and tried to grab the sword, but again, nothing but dark, swirly clouds and a hissing sound. What the hell? I spat. Maybe the sword was cursed or something, or maybe it had a level requirement that was so far beyond me that I couldn't pick it up. I wasn't sure, but I apparently wasn't getting that piece of loot anytime soon. I checked the skeleton's pockets, and the only thing that I found was a tiny, worn box with a golden ring inside.
You've received gold wedding band, durability 100 of 100, quality exceptional, rarity uncommon, weight 0.1 kilogram.
Jackpot, I said. The ring was immaculate, despite its worn box, and better yet, it looked real. Not that I could imagine them putting fake gold rings in the game, but hey, you never know. Whatever the case, a gold ring would most likely fetch a good deal at any vendor. I pocketed the ring and started to search the house further. On the bottom level of the house, just about all the furniture and decorations were ruined, nothing of value. There was, however, a wooden writing desk with a small drawer in the front, and when I pulled it open, several unsealed letters were inside.
Dear Ailinthi, oh how deeply I miss thee. It's been only a few months that I've been gone, but my heart aches every moment that I'm away from you. Do you remember the night we snuck off to the Runestone and made sweet love under the moonlight in the sky? Hopefully this war will end soon. I long to be back in the Vale. I long to be back with you. Stay safe, my sweetheart. Forever yours, Mithanthar. Dear Ailinthi, the war rages on, and I'm afraid it only grows in intensity. Can you believe this? The war with the dwarves is unnecessary.
We want no part of their land, and they want no part of our forests. Why can't the two sides simply live in peace? Hopefully this chaos will end soon. All I want is to return to the Vale and share an elven pie with you, like we did when we first met. Forget me not, Mithinthar. Dear Ilinthi, I met a dark elf today. Or rather, one of our comrades became a dark elf. He has been fighting the war far longer than me, and this morning he woke up with his skin a tinge of gray. It's terrible. I fear that if this war doesn't end, I too will become a dark elf. Would you still love me if that were to happen, if I were a dark elf? Nothing would break my heart more than to lose you. I'm sending you all of my wages to commission a house be built near the center of the Vale, but far away enough that we won't be disturbed. I figure it will be better for us to have a little privacy. When I get home, I want to ravage you with my love, and I loathe to think of what the neighbors will think from all the noise that we'll be making. Love eternally. Mithinthar. Cold steel connected with my back, causing me to drop the letter and scream out in pain. Again, someone had caught me from behind. I glanced at my health bar and 70% of my health was missing, and a bloody teardrop was sitting right below. You are bleeding and require medical attention. Bleeding is a damage over time effect. I had no time to think and rolled to the ground as I unsheathed my sword. Although the pain was searing in my back, I didn't want to die again. It was the skeleton. He had somehow pulled himself back together, and now a burning fire was literally pouring out of his eye sockets. It had also gained 3 levels. What the hell? Name, enraged lover. Race, undead. Level, 10. Health, 130. Mana, 0. Stamina, 100. Status, unknown.
Help me!
The raspy voice bellowed overhead as the skeleton stepped forward, swinging its sword faster and with more intensity than before. I dodged and ducked, trying my best to avoid the blade, but his movements were much swifter than mine. He swung his blade towards my chest with a sweeping motion, and when I tried to block, the intensity was so hard it knocked my sword out of my hand. You've reached level 2 in dodge. I stuck out my palm and sent a fire blast to its chest as a last-ditch effort, which pushed it away and knocked it down. I shot another fire blast which connected with its shoulder, knocking off an arm, and then one more fire blast towards the center of its flaming eyes. The skeleton tremored for a second, and then a black swirl of smoke surrounded its broken arm, and then it reattached itself to the skeleton's body. The skeleton got back to its feet like it was completely unaffected. My mana was spent, and I knew there was no way I was going to beat a level 10 in a sword fight. It was also blocking my escape route, and the likelihood of me dodging all its blows and making it out the front door were slim. The only option seemed to be to run for the stairs behind me. I took each stair up the house as fast as I could, the skeleton just a few meters behind me. When I reached the top, there was a short hall and only one room at the end with a closed door. Please be open, please be open, I muttered to myself as I took the last few paces to the door. It was. I swung open the door, stepped inside, and slammed it shut right as the skeleton smashed its sword into the wood. There was a small wooden latch that I used to lock the door behind me, and I pressed my hands on the door as the skeleton pounded its fists against it, hard. What the fuck? I said, breathing heavily. I could feel the blood running down my back, and I saw that I was at only 15% health. I reached inside my bag and pulled out my one and only health potion, drinking it to avoid an imminent death. I knew that I needed bandaging, but with the skeleton banging on the door, I didn't have time to do it now. Inside of the tiny room was a dirty bed with 2 skeletons lying on top. One of the skeletons had an arrow in its skull, and the other had a dagger lying near its throat. I could only hope those skeletons wouldn't come alive as well. There was a window inside the room, but when I looked down at the fall, I wasn't sure if I would survive. If I didn't die from the landing, I'd probably take enough damage that my bleeding would kill me before I could bandage myself. I turned around, looking for a weapon or anything that would allow me to fend off the skeleton and slip past him down the hall. There was a chest inside the room, but it was empty, and other than that, there was a lantern and men and women's clothing scattered about the room. I got into a prone position and looked under the bed, and discovered that there was a flat metal crate underneath, big enough for weapons storage, but when I pulled it out, there was a thick padlock attached to its front.
"Help me!"
the voice roared as the skeleton continued banging hard on the door. By that time, I was sweating bullets. I remembered what it was like to die, and that was not a feeling I wanted to experience again. And that skeleton didn't seem like it would play nice. In all likelihood, it would decapitate me and sever all of my limbs before I passed over to the dark side. I started searching through the clothes strung around the room, frantically hoping that one of them had a key, and after searching a woman's dress and a man's dress shirt, finally I found a key ring with two identically sized keys, keys that looked like they would fit the padlock. My hands trembled as I fumbled with the keys and stuck them in the padlock, and there was a resounding click when I turned. "Thank God," I said, feeling certain that there must be a weapon, a rope, a bomb, or something that could save me inside. But when I opened it up, my eyes went wide. No, no. Letters. Nothing but unopened envelopes with a red wax seal still intact. Mail that someone had tossed in the box and forgotten. The skeleton banged against the door, and I could hear the hinges beginning to crack. Pain seared through the wound on my back, and I moaned. Fuck it, I thought. I ripped open one of the letters and started reading. Maybe there could be something inside. Maybe one of them would give me directions to a secret ability or magic weapon when I respond. If I was going to die, I would make the best of it.
Dear Ilinthi, have you been receiving my letters, my love? It's been a week since I've gotten anything back from you, and I grow more and more concerned as each day passes. Have you fallen ill? Please let me know that you're okay. The war still rages on and has grown even more gruesome than ever. Some dark magic has been introduced, but I'll spare you the details lest your heart worry for me. I'm happy to let you know that I have yet to turn into a dark elf. My hair still shines and my skin still glows a porcelain white. But alas, my heart is blue. I miss you, my love, and every moment away from you aches a pain that I could never fill into words. Forever yours, Mithinthar.
What the fuck? I thought. Are these all love letters?
Dear Ilinthi, why haven't I heard from you, my love? I'm certain now that our mail must be getting lost somewhere in the post. But I have news. The war is ending, Ilinthi. It's really going to end soon. Yesterday we scored a striking victory against the other side, and our commanders see no way that the opposition can win. There may be one or two more months that elves will be deployed to battle, but since the enemy's numbers have dwindled, some of us will be leaving soon. I have requested that my commander send me home as quickly as possible. It may be days, Ilinthi. Days. Only days, and I can be in your loving arms again. This war has made me realize something. I never want to be away from you again. I'm going to buy a ring the moment that I make it to the Vale, and I want to make you my wife. My heart will never rest until the symbol of my love rests comfortably on your finger. Forever yours, Mithinthar.
You've found a hidden quest, Tormented Lovers. The skeleton of Mithinthar can never rest until his wedding ring reaches his lover's finger. You must take the wedding band from Mithinthar's pocket and place it on the finger of Ilenthi's remains in the upstairs bedroom. Reward unknown, 350 XP. Do you accept this quest? Accept/decline.
Yes, I yelled. Fucking yes, I accept.
You have accepted the quest, Tormented Lovers.
I jumped to my feet, and my heart was beating out of my chest as the skeleton pounded hard at the door. A hinge on the door came undone from the wood and tumbled to the floor. I reached in my bag and fumbled around for the wedding ring just as the skeleton flung itself at the door a final time, breaking the door down completely and falling inside the room with it. My mana had filled up just enough that I was able to send off another fire blast in its direction, pushing it back and stunning it briefly. I dove onto the bed, across the male skeleton,
reaching for the more petite frame of bones, grabbing its hand as the raging skeleton was picking itself back up.
"Help me!"
the voice roared out again. I lifted the skeleton's fingers and gently slid the wedding ring on its left hand, right as my attacker was stomping forward, raising its sword to strike me down. The enraged skeleton paused in its tracks, and the fire pouring out of its sockets suddenly vanished. A large transparent window popped in front of my eyes, and inside I had a bird's-eye view of a tall, muscular young elf with a bow on his back and a sword and dagger draped at his side, standing outside of the house that I was sitting in. But the house was not dilapidated in the image. It was pristine, and the garden outside was filled with flowers of every different color. The elf knocked on the door to the house, holding a small box in his hands, and then knocked again before pushing open the front door. He looked around the main floor and smiled as he ran his fingers across the top of the writing desk. He was happy, excited. His mouth opened as if he were calling for someone, but there was no sound. Rather, he just continued up the stairs until he came to the bedroom door. He casually pushed the door open, and when he did, his jaw dropped. Inside of the bed was a woman, breasts exposed and sleeping. Beside her was another elf, shirtless, who seemed to be lost in slumber as well. "Ilenthi," his lips muttered. I couldn't hear the words, but the pattern in his lip muscles spoke volumes. The elf stood there for a second before he lowered his head and slid the ring into his pocket. Tears slowly fell down the elf's porcelain cheeks, and within seconds, he looked up with anger in his eyes. He pulled the bow off his back and notched an arrow before his lips spoke louder. "Ilenthi." The eyes of the female shot open, and she sat up in bed, pulling the blanket quickly over her naked body. The man shot up as well. The woman said something, and her face looked frantic, but the male elf looked scared and confused. I have no idea what they were saying, but it only took a couple seconds before Mithanthar raised an arrow, and it shot directly into the man's skull, causing him to fall backward and immediately die. Ilenthi's face was a look of horror as she looked to her lover and said something else, but it didn't matter. The elf standing over her simply threw his bow to the side and pulled his dagger off his belt. Mithanthar jumped forward onto the bed and stabbed Ilenthi in the chest and then in the neck several times, causing blood to splash everywhere. Tears rolled down his face with each strike, and when he finished, he left the dagger protruding from her neck and smeared the blood and tears on his face with the back of his hand. He looked defeated as he stared down at his two victims, and then he slowly walked downstairs. When he reached the bottom room, he unsheathed his sword and said something towards the sky before he grabbed his sword by the hilt with both hands and shoved it deep in his chest cavity. Blood seeped from the elf's mouth, and he fell forward, the impact causing the sword to lodge further into his body. And then he rolled to his side and against the wall. The window in front of me disappeared, and a translucent apparition of a tall, muscular young elf, Mithanthar, seemed to simply step outside the body of the skeleton and looked at its hands as another apparition rose out of the body of Ilenthi. Mithanthar stared at Ilenthi as she rose from the bed, and after a moment, he simply asked, "Why? How could you?" Ilenthi's eyes looked watery, at least as watery as a translucent apparition could be, as she looked up to Mithanthar.
"Where did you go?"
"Where did I go?" Mithanthar asked. "I went to war, and then I came back for you."
"But he said you were dead."
"Dead?
After you sent the money to build this home, Alinar told me you were dead."
"Alinar?"
"The messenger."
Ilenthi turned to the other skeleton on the bed.
"He said you were killed in the war."
"I wasn't killed. I wrote you every day. I sent you money. You were everything to me."
"I didn't receive your letters," Ilenthi claimed. "After the house money, you went silent."
Mithanthar turned and noticed the box that I opened on the floor. He kneeled over to them and shook his head from side to side.
"My letters. The messenger must have kept them. He lied to you. He lied about everything.
I'm sorry, Ailinthi cried.
Mithanthar stood up and turned back to his lady.
But why would he be in your bed? I mean, why would he be in our bed? Why him?
Ailinthi's head dropped low.
I was alone. I thought you were gone and I'd never see you again. I swear I waited. A year or more after he told me you were dead, I rejected his advances. But finally I caved to him. I was lonely, Mithanthar. I was in so much pain.
Mithanthar clenched his teeth and bored a hole in the other skeleton that was sitting in the bed. Alinar, rise, he bellowed. A third apparition rose out of the male skeleton, and as soon as it formed, it looked shocked to be there.
You were tasked with delivering my gold and my messages, but you betrayed both me and Ailinthi,
Mithanthar condemned. Alinar's apparition looked defeated. His head sank, and for a moment, I thought he wouldn't say anything at all. Finally, he murmured,
I wanted her, the moment I saw her. I wanted her and would have done anything to get her.
May you rot in hell,
Mithanthar spoke loudly, and almost instantly, the apparition of Alinar seemed to twist into knots and then turned to jelly as it was visually pulled away to somewhere else.
I'm sorry, Ailinthi started. I'm sorry, I had no right.
It's okay, Mithanthar interrupted. All I wanted was to be with you, and now we're together.
Ailinthi's apparition grabbed onto Mithanthar's apparition and squeezed. Mithanthar turned to me, and with a somber face he said,
Thank you. I am finally free. Take my blade for your troubles.
Mithanthar raised a hand, and a dark cloud swirled around the tormented skeleton, causing it to drop to the ground in a heap of bones. Then the swirl of darkness swirled around the sword before dissipating into the air.
You have completed the quest Tormented Lovers. You have gained 350 XP. You have gained 10 MP. Advancement. You have reached level 5, and you have gained 3 attribute points. To assign your attribute points, open your status page. You can also increase any of your known skills by 1 level. Choose wisely, as your choice cannot be undone.
Since I wasn't poisoned, my bleeding stopped, and I was brought to full health. The two remaining apparitions embraced each other in a hug, and Mithanthar leaned down to kiss Ailinthi as they both faded from sight. I let out a loud sigh and laid myself on the bed, trying to regain my composure. Leveling up had instantly restored all my health and cleared my bleeding, but I still had been on the brink of death. And that story, fuck. That crazy elf was obsessed with his girl. It made me think of Rachel, actually. I had been so caught up in the game that I hadn't been thinking about her as much since the first couple of days since I had been sucked in. I still wanted to find her, of course, but I was beginning to have doubts. What if she wasn't looking for me? What if she met someone else? I shook my head of those thoughts and got up out of the bed, reaching for the skeleton sword.
You've received Mithanthar's blade, 12 to 25 attack damage, durability 9 out of 10, quality exceptional, rarity legendary, weight 2.7 kilograms, plus 5 strength, 5% chance to apply torment.
Torment? I focused, trying to will more information about the stat, and an informational appeared.
Torment will cause enemies to cease fighting while they deal with an inner struggle within their head. Does not work on beings with a very low intelligence or very high intelligence.
The sword was almost 2 feet long and had a slightly red tinge running through the blade. It seemed the color was embedded in the metal somewhere, and on the thick black hilt were 2 shallow oval cavities, similar to the magic sword that I had recovered from Nambunga's cave. I quickly swapped out the corroded sword for Mithanthar's blade. There was no comparison. The legendary sword was way better than my old sword, even if it didn't have the torment, and a plus 5 strength bonus. I equipped the sword and could feel a massive surge of power pulse through my muscles as I pulled up my stats. The strength bonus was showing tacked on. Nice. I unequipped the sword and re-equipped it, noticing that my stats changed, and each time it was equipped, there was a plus next to my strength.
Apparently, that meant that the stat was being influenced by an outside item or effect.
Gunner Long, race, human, level 5, progress 0%, 3 AP, 1 LP. Title, none. Health, 130. Mana, 110. Stamina, 100. Strength, 15 plus. Dexterity, 14. Intelligence, 15. Vitality, 10. Wisdom, 12. Willpower, 10. Charisma, 10. AR rating, 34. Resists, 10% fire resistance. Traits, Elven Touch. Primary skills, First Aid level 1, progress 0%. Inspect level 2, progress 15%. Sneak level 2, progress 10%. Tinkering level 1, progress 0%. Combat skills, Dodge level 2, progress 0%. Small blades level 2, progress 0%. Backstab level 1, progress 0%. Archery level 3, progress 15%. Block level 1, progress 35%. Swords level 1, progress 30%. Magic skills, fire magic level 2, progress 60%.
I thought then that I would probably stick to learning swords for close combat. Daggers were nice for sneak attacks and assassinations, but the ability to block attacks with swords meant that they would be a better bread and butter weapon as I continued to build up my character. I immediately assigned my LP to swords and put one AP point in wisdom, intelligence, and dexterity each. I had gotten a big enough boost from strength from the sword stats already to worry about raising strength, and I didn't want to risk dying and unnecessarily losing my stats. I was progressing nicely, I thought. I needed a new bow, but otherwise I was gaining skills and gear at a fast enough rate. I did one last round of the house to make sure there wasn't anything valuable. There wasn't. And then I headed back out into the wild.
Chapter 16. Month 1, Day 4, Year 1.
I started back in the direction of Mistvale Village in a sort of half circle, trying to cover new ground but also trying to get back to my room before it got too late. The sun was starting to set, and I had no idea what sort of dangers lurked in the jungle at night. The Amazon rainforest-like region was much denser in vegetation and seemed to have many more odd creatures crawling around than Adenfall. I heard a bunch of monkey sounds and started in its direction, but stopped and turned tail when I heard the roar of something that sounded like a massive gorilla. I had already used my only health potion, so I didn't want to move into anything that was too risky. Since I wasn't finding anything interesting, I used my sword to cut down small level 1 insects and threw fire blasts at birds and bugs that only granted me 20 to 25 XP with each kill. I must have killed 30 or so pointless critters and managed to gain another level in swords before I heard a low growl and the sound of strange yelping not too far in the distance. I approached cautiously and quietly as I recognized one of the growls as some sort of large cat, and if it weren't for the whelps of pain that accompanied the growls, I probably wouldn't have had the courage to get any closer. The growls, growls of multiple animals, turned to a roar, and then more yelps and the sound of chaos. I eventually decided it wouldn't be safe to move any closer on the ground, but I was still curious to what was going on. Beside me was a tall tree with a few low-hanging branches and very little green. I grabbed onto the lowest branch and started my climb to the top. I was 10 feet in the air before I finally had a good enough look at my surroundings. Visibility was limited by other trees and foliage in the distance, but I could see that only about 20 meters from where I sat, the group of animals that were making noise were scuffling. A big black cat, a panther of some sort, but even bigger than a panther, more like the size of Fenris, was backed up against a large tree. Surrounding it were 5 smaller creatures, the size of the average dog, hairless, with skin like a dinosaur. They looked almost like dinosaurs, actually, with their thick pointed tails. But I saw no arms or front legs, and their mouths were more like a flat beak.
Name, Wild Skinner. Race, Monster. Level, 15. Health, 160. Mana, 0. Stamina, 150. Status, unknown.
I attempted to inspect the large cat as well, but it must have been a much higher level, as every attempt failed.
You have failed to inspect your target. You have failed to inspect your target.
The giant panther backed its ass up against the tree and roared at the skinners surrounding it, but the skinners seemed unperturbed.
They just bounced backwards and forwards towards the panther, each one fighting for the panther's attention. A portion of the panther's skin had been torn at the belly, and bloody flesh dangled near the ground, blood dripping with its every movement. There were other wet, matted areas of the panther's fur, which I could only assume were bloody wounds, but I couldn't be sure due to its jet-black color. One of the skinners rushed forward as if about to attack, and the panther jumped towards it, swiping a paw. The blow from the panther was strong enough to knock the skinner down, but the claws of the panther couldn't penetrate the skinner's leathery skin. As soon as the other skinners saw that the panther was distracted, the one behind the panther leapt toward the panther's back and opened its flat, leathery beak, revealing a surprising set of several razor-sharp teeth. Its fangs plunged into the panther's soft skin, and the panther cried and then roared as it turned its head trying to fend off its attacker. As soon as it turned, another skinner jumped at the panther and sunk its teeth in near the panther's neck, latching on as the panther swiped and flung itself around madly. Eventually, the panther pried one of the attackers off, but the other only came off from the pressure of the panther's swings and hard rolls against the ground, tearing another chunk of flesh off in the process. This continued for several minutes, the skinners attacking, adding additional wounds to the panther's body, and the panther doing everything possible to get them off. It was clear that the skinners were trying to wear down the panther and bit by bit cause the animal to bleed out. Why was the panther putting up with it? I wondered. There was a huge tree trunk behind it, and cats knew how to climb trees. Was it because the skinners could also climb trees? Whatever the case was, the panther needed to tuck its tail and run because it was clearly losing the battle. The panther licked its bloody nose and shook its head in confusion, right before it briefly fell to its stomach. Several of the skinners jumped on all at once, but the panther snapped back into its senses and started swatting at the various areas it had been attacked and rolling on the ground, desperate to get them off. It was only then that I saw what the panther was fighting for. At the base of the towering tree it was guarding was a small hole, and a pair of glistening green eyes pierced through the hole's darkness. A baby panther looking on as its mother's skin was ripped to shreds. The tiny cat peeked its head out with concern, but retracted in its hole when one of the skinners jumped in its direction. Without a moment's hesitation, the mother panther roared and ignored the skinners clamping onto its body to jump towards the hole and block any chance that a skinner would get its child. I never imagined myself as any sort of hero, and attacking those level 15 dinosaur-looking beasts was probably a bad idea, but I knew I'd have trouble sleeping at night if I continued watching the panther get chewed up, followed by the consumption of the baby cat. And if I just walked away, I wasn't sure how I'd feel about myself in the morning. I climbed down from the tree and ran as quickly as I could toward the ensuing battle, and when I was within firing range, I climbed up another tree, and with one hand holding myself steady, I stuck out my other hand and unleashed a fire blast at one of the skinners. The impact knocked the skinner down, and its skin sizzled as the flames from the blast dissipated. The blast shocked the other skinners, and they all started looking around for the source of the attack, ignoring the wounded panther behind it. You have reached level 3 in fire magic. I shot another fire blast at one of the other skinners, knocking it down like the one before, and with that attack, even the panther looked startled. The panther's eyes quickly found me as I charged up another attack, and when I scalded yet another skinner's hide, the skinner yelped like an injured dog and ran off through the woods. The other skinners raised their beaks and yelped just like the one who ran and then scurried off behind it. I could see the foliage shaking as the strange monsters ran further and further away, and the exhausted panther finally relaxed and laid its weary head on the ground, closing its eyes. The baby panther crawled out of its hole and gave its best growl, which was really more of a meow, as it approached its fallen mother. The small cat looked confused and meowed again as it started to lick its mother's wounds. For a moment, I only watched, hoping that the mother panther would rise and stroll away. I had mixed feelings about the situation. Eden's Gate was supposed to be a game, a programmed world, and the dying panther was supposed to be an NPC. But how could it seem so lifelike? Everything from the wounds on the panther's body
to the muddled behavior of the baby cast a dark shade of gray over fiction versus reality. I didn't want the baby panther to die. Hell, I didn't want the mother panther to die either. And still, I didn't understand why, because they were technically just code written in a computer system.